Blog Talk Radio.
Tree shaker, and I was a jelly maker.
I was almost offended. But I got over
a cheat, a tree shaker.
What are you talking about?
A tree shaker.
He's a tree. A tree. A tree. You know, Gabe would have a speech
shaker.
Impediment. Do you guys know that Gabe would have a speech impediment? We can't say, a lot
shaker.
Of us can't say CH words properly. And I'm really having a problem with this TR word. Tree. A tree.
As long as you don't say tree for three.
All right, Robert, we're going to get into this conversation, man. We're going to get dead into this conversation.
Maybe we have some Jamaican ancestry.
No way, man.
Don't go there. They will say,
tree little bird. Tree little bird,
right,
sit by my doorstep.
Hey,
1, 2, 3.
All right, bye. Brother. Okay, brother. In about 2 seconds, we're going all the way live. I hope you got your stuff together.
You know, corrected me on my speech impediment the other day.
Who?
Who's that?
Lauren.
Your grandbaby?
Baby.
My grandbaby. 8 years old.
That's cold right there. Oh, hey, Joseph.
She said, what are you
Joseph.
Saying, Papa?
Right.
Are you saying...
Hey, Joseph.
Huh?
I wouldn't have told that.
No, I know I have a speech impediment. I'm just proud that my granddaughter is...
I'm picking this, man.
Look at these nuts coming up.
Uh-oh, Joseph driving. Let's mute Joseph's mic. Because when Joseph driving, he is not a nice guy. He needs to be edited.
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Brother For Real Radio Show. I am Leon. I have in the studio with me, this virtual studio with me, Joseph Gatewood. Joseph, you're present. Say present.
Yes, sir. What did you say?
When I call your name, please say present.
Present.
Joseph Robert Gatewood.
Did somebody say to get him at present?
When I was in the first grade, we had to say, I am here.
And that's, they didn't go for
what
present?
Person? Who's giving that present?
Hey, Rob. Hey, Joseph, they wouldn't settle for present or here?
No, you had to speak it out, buddy. I am here.
Wow. That's kind of, you know, excuse me for saying it, Joseph, that's kind of picky.
I know that was first grade, man. That was in 1960.
I don't care what year it was picky.
Maybe that was part of our learning process, how to compose a complete sentence.
Oh, okay. I see that. I can see that.
I am here.
And pledge your allegiance to the flag.
Guess what, guys? Curtis Gatewood. Let me call you, man. I don't want to leave you out.
Present.
Curtis. Present. See, now he's the only one to comply. Imagine that. Curtis is the only one to comply properly. Thank you, Curtis. Don't forget in the world today.
Yes,
let me take this out, guys.
Yes, sir.
I have to read this. I really have to read this. And you almost have to be a Gatewood to know why this is tripping me out. Anyway, I got this email from the NAACP, and it says, Leon, as Texas moves to adopt even harsher voting restrictions, a group of state legislators are headed to Washington, D.C. in an effort to block the vote and protect access to the ballot box for millions of Texans. In response, Governor Greg Abbott has threatened to have them arrested. NAACP is pledging to bail these lawmakers out of jail if necessary. A line has been drawn. War has been declared on democracy, and the NAACP will support anyone who stands up to defend our rights. We are fully invested in making good trouble. the Texas legislature's efforts to silence the voices of its own constituents is an assault on our most fundamental values. We will not stand idly by as partisan politicians dismantle our system, oppress our voices, and suppress our votes. People have fought and died for the sacred right to vote. This is a time of crisis. Our Constitution is being tested, and we need all hands on deck. Leon, we're all in on this. Are you?
All right.
Now,
well,
here's what
an abomination. What's going on down in Texas? I was saying, I think it's an abomination what's going on down in Texas, what's going on in Florida and these other state houses across the country. That this assault on the democracy. I decided that democracy to the certain people only applies when they're in power. And they say democracy be damned if they're not in power. They would do it resort to communism, fascism, Nazism, or whatever ism to maintain power. So democracy was a means to an end. It wasn't an end in itself. And I think that's where the problem falls.
Hey, Robert.
Yes,
unfortunately, that is also the case in the NAACP. I say this because it's personal to me. You know, when I got this email, I was excited to the extent that I am so disgusted with what's going on in Texas, and we are so. I'm so excited about what the Democrats in Texas are doing to try to handle it or address it. But when I read the email from Mr. Johnson saying what the NAACP is going to do, I could not help but feel it was hypocrisy. And I think, like I said, you would almost have to be a Gatewood to know that. Almost. Almost. But ladies and gentlemen, we have on tonight, we have any other brothers around the room want to say anything about that before I move on? We do have a guest tonight.
I want to say something about it, Leon.
Okay.
I want to speak about the hypocrisy of NAACP and specifically Derek Johnson and William Barber. I want to go to the NAACP headquarters, and I want to personally speak to Derek Johnson, and I want to know why he has avoided due process within his own organization and supported voter suppression. It's going to be difficult for anybody to take the NAACP serious as long as they continue to be hypocritical and not practice what they preach. And I plan to make a personal stand to make this to address this issue at the NAACP headquarters and hopefully get a chance to speak with Derek Johnson and ask him why he has avoided due process and why he has been complicit in voter suppression in North Carolina.
Well, me too. Anybody? Me too.
Leon?
Yes.
And Joseph. I would like to humbly say this is an example of an overall need for we in the black community to say what we mean and do what we mean. And oftentimes we talk about the blatant self-hatred that we see playing out in the streets, but we don't talk about it when it's playing out in the suites. We don't talk about it when it's playing out in organizations, churches, and so on and so forth. So in order for us to really do justice, and I think one of the reasons why we've probably been oppressed for so long is because sometimes when we get power, we emulate our oppressors. And so I would like to say to Mr. Johnson and NAACP, not just for myself, but I think we need to look at our own constitution that we have. See, the NAACP, they didn't only have the U.S. Constitution, but they have the NAACP Constitution. And so if the NAACP would follow its bylaws, we would have had an election in 2019 in North Carolina that has not been held as of this day. And so the question becomes, why is that? Why have not we had an NAACP election in North Carolina, one that was scheduled for October 5th, 2019? So those are some major concerns. Those are major questions that have to be asked, especially if we are going to be, or if we have an organization that says it's going to be the champion for voting rights. This is not just a question that comes from me personally, but it is a question that must come from everyone who wants to see voting. Because guess what? To me, some of the black organizations such as the NAACP, so on and so forth, I consider that leadership just as important, if not more so, than a lot of the legislators that are elected. So if we're going to have an election for a statewide African-American civil rights organization, and it's put on hold for 2 years, imagine what that could be doing to the larger community if you were to elect strong leadership that could address the issues of police misconduct, that could address the issues of the educational problems that we have in the educational system, that could address mass incarceration and voter suppression. Imagine if you had a very active NAACP state conference across the state in the various states. If we sat on an NAACP election for 2 years, we don't know what talent we are preventing and suppressing. And look at the precedent that we are establishing. So that's my thing. It's a fact. North Carolina has not held its 2019 election. And those are people who come across the state, various delegates from youth, from college, from adult branches, youth councils. They didn't vote. 2019, North Carolina. So your point, well made, guys.
All right.
Right on. Look, guys, as I said, we do have a special guest tonight. Robert, we're going to take a quick break and loop her in. Our guest tonight is Ms. Constance Love Johnson, a Livingstonian, guys. LC, wait, who you with? Anyway, she's the founder of Black Legislative American Caucus, BLAC, and she is dying to be North Carolina's first black U.S. senator.
All right.
And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Ms. Constance Love Johnson. All right, brother.
All right.
Just might as well, hell, please just guide to me.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Brother Prevail Radio Show. I am Leon Gatewood here, and I'm so excited to have one of my fellow Livingstonians with us tonight. Matter of fact, I have...
Yes.
Give us a minute, Joseph. Give us a minute, Joseph. As a matter of fact, I have two other fellow Livingstonians on the call. And, of course, we have an NCCU Eagle on the call as well. So we have one, two, three...
We won't hold
is that
again.
Like four Livingstonians and one NCCU Eagle. That's, let me turn Joseph's mic on. I know he's fussing or something over there. Let's see. So, Joseph, you have anything to say about that?
No, I can say is Eagles don't flop.
I'm pretty good.
I hear, man. I knew I should have left him over there. Let's mute him again. He's muted.
Yeah. Send him back in the waiting room over there.
Ladies and gentlemen, the number to call is 215-383-3872. The brothers always enjoy talking to themselves, but we do like to hear from you every now and then. Right now, we're going to bring this Constance Love Johnson on the line, and I'm going to give you a quote from herself. She says, on November 8, 2022, North Carolina could send the first black woman in history to the U.S. Senate. My greatest hope is that it is me. The work that I do now for the constituents of my state. All right. All right. Give a cool here, Robert. Let's hear that. I like that clap. That's a good start.
Beautiful.
People are clapping, boy.
She goes further to say, the work that I do for the constituents of my state is identical to the work I would do for you there, and I will be even more dedicated if that's possible. This election calls for one that was. Thank you very much. Thank you. Constance, I'm getting more claps off your stuff than I ever got off my stuff. Anyway, This election calls for one that will not go silent, but will stand boldly for you, for your every need, with grace and honor. That's from Constance Love Johnson. Welcome to the Rose Maria Show, Constance. How are you doing tonight?
Thank you so much. I'm doing
so
fantastic, and this is so important to me. I thank you so much, Brothers Gatewood. It's like Brothers Johnson. Brothers Gatewood, I just thank you so much for this. I'm very honored.
Yeah,
you know,
so
Eagles are okay. You know, the Eagles are getting bigger these days. Have you noticed? I saw a video the other day. A video was picking up a fox and taking him home to eat.
Oh, my goodness.
These Eagles are getting big. But, you know, bears are bigger than eagles.
Hey, you've been watching those videos.
I'd like to see an eagle pick up a bear, wouldn't you? Try that. Try that on you.
Not going to happen. Yes.
Constance, how are you? Look, we're excited. We're excited. I am. We're excited. Always excited to see young African Americans in action. And you are one of the most active people I know. I honestly have to say
that. Thank you. I take it as a compliment.
I was telling Curtis earlier, you remind me of him. And that is really something.
That is.
Look, but look, don't install her now.
I think what Curtis and I have in common is we're both direct. Curtis states what he believes, and he states what the truth is, and that's how I am. I'm the same way. I don't believe in lying, and I don't believe in underhandedness. I believe in being direct and honest because one of my supervisors told me one time that if you tell me the truth, I know which direction to move in. But if you tell me something that just made me happy, I may move in the wrong direction. So I believe, like just like your brother believes, I believe that it's important to be direct and honest and truthful and tell the truth according to the facts.
Exactly. So before we get into your aspirations here, can you just kind of give us a little background of your, you know, I'm going to get a little personal here. Can you get a little background? Do you have children? Do you have, you know, what's going on with you?
Yes, I have. I'm the spouse of a physician, and I have a daughter who just returned from Africa and she had a beautiful time over there and met her husband there. I have a grandson who is an MVP in every league in North Carolina. And he's about 6'4 now and does not miss a basket. Every blue moon. But I am a graduate of Livingstone College. I finished my master's in education and psychology in Maryland, at the University of Maryland. At Livingstone, I majored in psychology and education. And I had a full scholarship in orchestra. I played the cello. And then I went to And then I went to seminary.
Mm-hmm.
I went to seminary for a while because I really needed to understand the law. My plan was to go to law school. But I was veered from law school and ended up working for Creative Loafing Newspaper. And I worked there for some years with the greatest publisher, Ben Easton, and I also work with Womack here, Alex Womack, in Charlotte, North Carolina. I don't work with Womack, but we work together on some projects, and we're always planning to do something special, you know, special for his publication, which is Creative Loafing Charlotte. And I also finished another degree in in seminary. Finished a degree that focused on theology. And that's where I gained my understanding of law. And that was really the best decision I made, was to gain my understanding of law from seminary instead of law school.
Wow.
Law school has become a little corrupt in some ways. It trains lawyers to grow money and to be, of course, be successful, but to mainly focus on winning instead of truth and facts. I then pursued a doctoral degree in public administration, and that's where I am now. I practice public administration and administrative law, and I am pursuing the Senate after running for the state superintendent's job. The state superintendent of public instruction race was really tough. It was, it's a statewide race, and the person who won was really the person I would have chosen if I couldn't win. So everything turned out fine. She is a Republican. I'm a Democrat. But Catherine Truitt is really the most honest, down-to-earth person that North Carolina could have chosen for that job.
Wow.
I really believe that North Carolina has an issue with education and black people in leadership in the state. So we have a council of state that is still predominantly white. We have one black man on the council of state. The council of state is the leaders that the governor's cabinet, I'll say. So the governor's cabinet has been white all throughout history, except one short stint of time. But all throughout history, it's been predominantly white or all white, and until now. And the lieutenant governor, Mark, why did I forget Mark's last name? Who knows Mark's last name? Robinson. Mark Robinson is now on the council of state. So he is really not someone we would lean on as black people for knowledge and information. He's a Republican, Robinson, but he is very active in his party, well respected in his party, but is not in any way someone we need to lean on as black Americans. He does not support our projects. He does not support our ideals. He does not support our children, and the lieutenant governor is over the educational system. He is riding along with the critical race theory and abolishing it. He is in support of that. So that gives you an idea of what he believes. He's just not one who supports black issues and stands by black people. So So we have an issue in North Carolina with race. You know, we're at the top of the list around the country when it comes to violating the rights of Black Americans. I believe Biden's team, you know, I listened to you talk about the NAACP and how they're really not moving at a rapid pace or energized about voting rights. Well, I know that Derek Johnson met with Biden this week, and you're right, he does not put forth the energy and compassion that we need to bring our citizens, bring Black Americans to the voting booths. The precincts are still unmanned. We have lots of issues in the Black communities, especially the predominantly Black communities around the country. North Carolina is one of the worst when it comes to bringing our Black citizens to the polls. And we have a lot of work to do. It's so bad, you know, especially in Mecklenburg County. We have Mecklenburg Democratic Party that literally blocks Black people from the SEC meetings or the conventions, which means we have a chairperson. Jane Whitley is over the Mecklenburg Democratic Party and literally did a Republican move by putting some kind of a precinct number on the access codes to get into the SEC meetings that was virtual. So a lot of people didn't get in there to vote on who they wanted to chair the party. And I'm so frustrated with her choosing who wins the races, and they're always white. Blacks really don't do well in North Carolina when it comes to high-level political offices. To have this kind of blockade and to have this kind of voter suppression within the party makes it very tough for Black Americans in North Carolina to have internal issues and external issues, having the Republican Party fight us and have internal issues with our own Democratic Party in North Carolina fighting us is why Biden didn't win North Carolina. And, you know, I'm to the point there's so many issues within the Democratic Party that need to be rectified and remedied that I'm starting to work with other leaders in the party to galvanize and provide another resource, an alternative resource for choosing our leaders, for making sure that our leaders, Black American leaders, receive votes. We have, you know, I'm running right now against Beasley, Sherry Beasley, who was the former Chief Justice of the state, and I'm running against this gentleman who's been in the North Carolina House for about four terms. His name is Jeff Jackson. These two have never done anything at all for anyone in North Carolina.
Right. Let me ask you this right quick, Constance, before you get into that. Okay. Because we're going to run out of time if we're not careful. What I would like for you to cover right quick is what is your platform? What is your platform for, say, the Black community? I know you're running as a Black candidate, so I know you have some of the Black issues at hand. What are some of the top issues that you consider issues that we must address immediately in the Black community as a person with power in the government?
Well, that's what I was, you know, I was leading to that, running against these two candidates, Jeff Jackson and Sherry Beasley. I was actually, this is what we face in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Governor Cooper actually, and it's a process that these governors engage in across the country, but North Carolina is something that all governors seem to be required to do, to get along with the state assembly members that are always majority Republican in North Carolina. They have to do something to hurt Black people. That's what it seems. But we don't receive any money from North Carolina state government. We don't receive our minority department of black, you know, development of black businesses. They don't provide us with enough revenues to do anything for black businesses in North Carolina. So we really only receive 2% of the contracts, and we're upwards of 25% of the population of North Carolina. When Governor Cooper receives contracts, he gives them away or he uses them himself if they come from black people. And I'm not making this up. When he does, he takes my information, my contract, and uses them in front, you know, there are 4,000 witnesses that watched him use probably 6 or 7 of my projects right in a row. But he's been doing it for years. But that's what they do to black innovators, people who have contracts, black people who have contracts in this or seek contracts in the state. They're completely avoided, omissive of all contributions or all grants, all contracts. Only 2% are provided to black vendors. Now, when I went to Sherry Beasley and submitted a case to her about this issue, and I have full evidence, I have superintendents that have observed this. I have the Lieutenant Governor, Dan Fisher, observed, Dan Forrest observed this. And what she did was she tried to protect him by ignoring me and telling me that I have to have a lawyer, which is against the law. That's a violation. That's a due process violation. So what Beasley will do to black people as a U.S. Senate is, if there are high-level officials that are white that have something against black people that are, feel as if they shouldn't, they don't deserve this income, they don't deserve this wage, she is going to support that official, and she is going to blindside black people, because that's what she's always done. And she did it to me. That's millions of dollars that I could have used to build schools, to assist your program, to build more businesses, to update Beatty's Fort Rhodes businesses. I could have used that revenue, which was $135 million a year, that he just simply took from me and sent it out to the other governors, and they just used my work without paying me one penny. But that's what Beasley does. Most judges know that their responsibility is to the citizen, and their responsibility is to justice for the entire state. But Beasley is not one to stand up for black Americans. She's not one to stand up for justice. She's going to stand up for the bureaucracy. She's actually engaged right now in blocking black people from, you know, business contracts. Whatever he wants to do, you can do under my watch. And as soon as she lost her race, I was able to file a complaint and start the case. And it's a legitimate case. I have a few issues with our government in general always violating us and focusing on power and abusing power and refusing to provide the same level of due process that they do for white citizens in the country. The reason why I created the Black Legislative American Caucus and the Charlotte Mecklenburg Democratic Party was to give all people full justice without the violation of due process for citizens in North Carolina. Everyone should have the right to speak as they would like to speak, as long as it's not profane or as long as it doesn't defame someone stating a lie. But if it's true, you've got to let people state what they need to state. And that's a constitutional right. And to have people blocking you from voting, the SEC is the state party meeting to decide who's endorsed, where the money's going to be spent, where what is going to happen with the state precinct, what are the new projects coming up, and black people are denied opportunities in Mecklenburg County to participate in that process. that is a federal crime. And we need more of our black citizens here, and we need more of our citizens in general in North Carolina to focus on justice and to not allow anyone, black, white, brown, or blue, to violate the rights of our citizens. Whenever there is a violation in the court system or whenever you're violated legally, you have a right to go before the federal district court, and you have a right to request help from our court. They are to provide you with whatever you need and provide you with guidance to make sure that you receive the justice you're due. You cannot have a chief justice lying about the process. You need a lawyer. Well, you know, I study administrative law. I think I can handle this case. You can't do this without having a lawyer, and you cannot have a chief justice protecting the governor when the governor is violating the law. So we have so many changes that need to be made in North Carolina to make sure that we can vote on the people we want to vote on, that we are not forced to vote on people that don't work for us, that are providing favors to people just to get them, you know, to get endorsements and just to get, you know, we need to make sure that the people have a right to hear everyone in North Carolina who's running for office. You know, Leon, if you run for office and the people don't know you yet, or you ran in a different race and they don't see you in that way, we have to let you talk and speak at every event that is being conducted for the reason for that particular office you're running for. This violates violent media and the violence of this political process in North Carolina is completely out of order. Biden should not have lost. Democrats outnumber Republicans by thousands and thousands of votes. But we lost that, you know, Biden lost in North Carolina, didn't get those electoral votes because we are not organized and people are forcing people to vote a certain way, blocking people from running, blocking people from being seen, and putting the people in that most people don't even want to win. And we have to make sure that that justice is put forth in future elections. But what I want you to do as black Americans, I want you to organize to prepare to grow the economy, because what we have to do is make sure that we understand how government impacts whoever you put into these elected offices greatly impact your economy. Why have black Americans in our state Senate and House not fought for your economic rights when it comes to receiving contracts? People receive billions of dollars in contracts, and black Americans are receiving very close to zero. That is something that should have been addressed years ago. I will address those issues. You will have your dollars, the money that you deserve, and the money that you're owed. And when it comes to organizing, we have to stop depending so much on white Americans. 23 million North Carolinians lean on white American employers. 53,000 black Americans lean on black businesses. If Trump makes it back in, God forbid, and he decides that he is going to continue with his effort to divide the people of the United States and not separate them in the way that we're talking, where we focus on our own economies for a while. You know, we have to focus on our own economy. Segregation was not a negative thing, but if we understand the economy we had before integration occurred, integration may not have been good for our economy. But it may have been better, you know, may have been better for our economy, but there's a way to both segregate and integrate. There's a way to love each other, marry each other, do business together, but still focus on your own culture, your own race, to make sure that your economy is strong. Because this is a competition. I'm not going to make anything up here. The Hispanics are doing very well, and I'm not trying to say the Hispanics are doing better than we're doing, but economically, they're becoming very strong in the United States. They're strong politically too. They will stand up. You know, I mean, not that we don't. I'm not saying that we don't, But just as the Asian Americans are receiving this great attention, it's because of their economy. We are in an economic battle, and the economy of each of us, each of the groups in the United States, racial groups in the United States, whoever has a strong economy and not dependent on another people can make decisions, can open roads, can tell people what they need to do, and they have the revenues to build and walk into any room they want to demand what they want. And if we want to believe that it is solely the vote that counts, it is not solely the vote that counts. We have to have a strong economy, and we cannot be dependent on people who don't want us dependent on them. That's walking into a trap. It's like, I'm going to go to my enemy for money. You're right. Walk into that bank and walk out with some money. You know,
you got it right, Constance. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. When we come back, we want to talk about your vision for stopping the killing among in the black community. I'm sure a lot of that has to do with some of the things you already mentioned, like the economy and things of that nature. But, of course, that's one of the issues that Curtis and I, that are most dear to our hearts, and the education issue, of course, and the arts, how we can get more arts into the community, yeah. Things of that nature. So when we come back, we're going to discuss those things. And one of the major things I like about you, you're about the action. You're about building the community through your actions, and you're not just a lot of talk, because I'm one of the ones on the receiving end of what the things that you do. So we appreciate what you do. God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you.
Be right back, ladies and gentlemen. The number to call is 215-383-3872. If you want to talk to the host, the guest tonight. Back in, ladies and gentlemen. The number to call is 215-383-3872. We're on the line with Ms. Constance Love Johnson, a living Estonian, all the way from, hold on a minute. Where are you from, Constance? Are you from Salisbury?
Yes, I'm from Salisbury.
From Salisbury.
Born in
what?
Salisbury, 4 or 5 generations in Salisbury.
Get out of here.
Well, so far, about 5 generations. I'm heading into the 1700s now on Ancestry.com. So I am truly a North Carolina.
Good.
We were here when the colonies were still organized.
We were here when they...
Yeah,
you were here for
North
the first
Carolina.
Thanksgiving.
I'll always fight for North Carolina. That's
right.
Well, I have a few Native Americans in my family, so we may have been there.
Well, check this out. There were 7 of us there. You know, as you can imagine, there were 7 of us there. That was pretty tough. I remember when Dad took me, because Robert was already there, my brother Robert. So it was like not a lot mm-hmm. of fanfare. Me going to college, it was just kind of like take this guy and leave him on the steps, and Robert would take him on in the door, in the gate, you know. So it's kind of Yeah. No fanfare at all.
You have a huge family. It must have been wonderful growing up in your home.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful and scary. Yeah. You know.
What was scary about
it? You never knew you were going to take off. And a lot of people you could take off in there in one house, you know. And and mom and dad were, you know, they were professional. What's the word I'm trying to find? Disciplinarians. Yes, they're
mm-hmm.
professionals. They would train the ones, like for instance, they trained Joseph to discipline me, everybody on under him. You know what I mean? So he was trained to keep us straight. Then Robert.
Well, he did a great job.
Trained until I'm gonna leave it right there. Constance, too many of us are killing each other. What can we do?
We're not giving the youth enough to do. When you're raising, you know, my daughter, when she had her son, she always leaned on me for advice because she turned out pretty good. My daughter was born when I was a teenager. And, you know, her father's a great guy. You know, I still love him to death. But she was raised by two great families that just poured love on her. And I made sure that she was distracted. She had reading programs during the summer. She had, all kinds of activities during the school time, you know, during school period. And you just have to keep youth busy. You can't let them stand on a corner. You can't allow them to drop out of school. And we need a million programs. We need 25,000 businesses, black businesses in every state. So can you imagine what the youth are missing? You know, if we're lacking 25,000 businesses, they don't have any jobs. And that's a fact. They don't have any jobs. We have to teach our children to understand the importance of engagement. You know, we started getting engaged in our 30s as black Americans. But we really need to focus on, that's why we're doing this 20 partnership program, to make sure that we build our businesses to what? Employ. That's why we're doing that employee conference. And we're calling it the employee conference to make sure that we can galvanize 20 people, 1,250 groups of 20 in every state to build businesses. So 20 people will come together and you have backup. If you need $10,000, it's just $500 each to build these businesses. Our children, our youth, you know this, Leon. You do exactly what I'm saying. You keep youth busy. You give them a place. You provide a place for them to go. You provide activities for them to engage in. You give them T-shirts. You give them joy. They love, and your children in your program will be successful. They will be, because they see strong black leaders organizing for them every day, every year, making sure that they are academically strong and recreational, getting involved in recreational sports. You're going to have some pro athletes coming out of your program. You're going to have some scholars coming out of your program because you're so engaged in their lives. We need 25,000 of these in every state. Now, I don't know how many youth programs we have in the state right now, but I don't think 25,000 exists in any other state. But we cannot let them wander. We have to give them too much to do. That's what we have to do. We need a program called
Too
Much to Do for our youth.
Yeah, so what I want to know is the government. Okay, let me say this. I don't like the concept of waiting on the government, and that's why I don't. But my question, though, is does the government do enough to support the ideas or the things that our communities need, in your opinion? When I say, and if not, what more could they do?
Well, they are not doing anything for the black community right now. I would say right now Biden and Harris, along with the majority U.S. Senate and House, this is the greatest time of our lives if you're a black American. It's so important for us to utilize the government right now, the government benefits, the government resources. Every race of people on this in this country focuses on government for contracts. We have 435 federal agencies. Now, what is a federal agency? A federal agency is the Department of Treasury, and they are sub-agencies, you know, hundreds of sub-agencies, sometimes 20, 30 to 100 sub-agencies under each federal agency. You know, Department of Justice is an agency. You know, there's so many different departments. The president's cabinet is those secretaries are over the federal agencies. Now, each of these agencies have contracts, have grants to give away. And we just sit back because we don't have a state. We don't have an official in this state. Now, Alma Adams is always throwing us grants out, throwing us information out, contracts. Alma Adams does a great job. But Tillis and Burr, they're throwing theirs in the other direction. They're not throwing them at us. The black community rarely hears from Tillis and rarely hears from Burr. Those are our U.S. senators. We've not had a black senator in the history of North Carolina. And what we need to understand is we need someone who doesn't sit quiet in an office protecting the governor. We need someone who's out here looking like Alma Adams, moving around, talking to people, making sure programs are built, making sure programs are funded, making sure everyone's aware that the HBCUs need this and this. This is what we need from this U.S. senator that's going to be elected, and that's me. It certainly is not Beasley, and it certainly is not Jackson. We need someone who will look through the community and not be afraid of our community, but walk through every community to make sure they have what they need. And right now, it has these situations where someone is listening and building has never happened. Never happened.
Hey, Robin, Curtis Joseph. Robin Curtis Joseph Constance actually came down here and walked through Marvin. Hear that? She actually came down here and walked through Marvin doing our 5K. Give her a hand, man. Anyway, thank you, Constance, for actually doing that. We appreciate you coming down and walking through Marvin.
I love it. I love your program.
Spending time with us. But here's what I need you to do in the last couple of minutes. What does a Constance Johnson, what must happen for a Constance Johnson to be elected in North Carolina as the North Carolina Senate? What, as a U.S. Senator? What will have to happen? What must happen for a Constance to be elected?
What has to happen is we need to galvanize and to make sure that everyone is registered to vote. That's number one. You need to be registered to vote, and that just takes take a couple of minutes, go to your local board of elections, your county board of elections, and give them your name, complete the form. And that's it. It's free, doesn't cost anything, and it's the only time you have to do it, one time, one single time. Unless you move, then you have to call back and change your address. But it's just a one-time registration. And never miss a vote. The primary election is going to get me into this office. If no one shows up for the primary election, then somebody you don't want who sits there and talks and never helps, never does anything, never supports, never moves, will get into this office, and the same life will continue for black Americans in North Carolina. And we need someone in these offices that move and galvanize and know the federal government. Judges, they don't know too much about the federal government. They know about laws, but they don't write laws. They're not law writers. They're not lawmakers. And it's a big difference between someone who never wrote a law and someone who writes laws. I write laws continuously. Everyone on in the country can write a law and submit it to their U.S. senators or the U.S. House representatives to take it before a committee, to be accepted by a committee. So understand that these offices really need to put forth someone. You need to put forth someone who will walk up to you, talk to you, and work with you directly, not someone who has prestige who's trying to protect governors, and governors are trying to protect their appointees, but someone who actually works. We need someone who works. What I need you to do is vote. Vote in the primary election, which is March 8th, 2022.
March 8th, 2022. That's okay, right. Council, time is up.
All the voting is going to take place.
God bless you, Constance. Our time is up. Keep saying it. Say it again. I'm sorry. I'm not going to cut you off until you get your sentence out this time.
I'm saying that the municipal races have been postponed to March 8th. So this will be a big vote next year.
Okay, very good. Constance, we love you. Thank you for being on our show tonight.
I love you guys. And keep up the good work. You're just doing a beautiful job for the community. You do so much for us. And thank you so much. You're beautiful men.
You.
I don't know if you
thank
want
you.
To
thank you.
Bless
you. God bless you. Appreciate you.
God bless
you. Thank you.
All right, brothers, that's a wrap, man.